the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Batting leadoff for your day of sports coverage supremacy. This is Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yoenis Cespedes, 455 feet away. And he is your 2013 Chevrolet Home Run Derby champion.
That's how it ended. Yoenis Cespedes. What can we do to stop you banging the table?
I'm just getting upset.
One of the updates earlier.
It was.
Yeah, because he took a shot at the Canadian Football League, and that pisses me off. I'm sorry. I'm going to bang the table when that
happens.
Took
a shot at Joey Vendetta yesterday, and that pisses me off. He's a good friend of mine. Okay.
Oh, you're
that
tight.
That really pissed me off. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we hang out. We hang and bang.
I got a dolphin for you, pal.
That from last week? One of the more memorable? That was the most memorable thing?
Okay, that was the best of right there.
I got a dolphin for you, pal.
You too, honestly.
I don't know what that means.
The snark, honestly, your snarkiness. I won't tolerate it
anymore.
You have
rubbed off on us. So.
No, I have not. There's no rubbing off of anybody in here happening at all. So Yoenis Cespedes, he isn't an all-star, but he won the all-star home run derby last night. Figure that part out. It's over. It's done. We don't have to talk about it again for another year or so. You did say this earlier. You like the majesty of it. I'm trying to think of something that could be a singular event in any other sport. And free throws in basketball, no. Field goals in football, no. But there is some grace element to the ball, hitting the bat, sound of it, and the carry of the ball. And the one thing I noticed in the couple minutes I watched last night was the instantaneous number that goes up. 378 feet, 434 feet. That's pretty incredible that they can do that.
Well, and that is the appeal of the home run derby, the fact they're hitting home runs 450, 460, Chris Davis 502, hitting a baseball that far is a sight to behold. It's one thing to see in a regular season game. You might see it once. You may not see it in a game at all. But to see Cespedes hit 17 times the opening round and the distance of the home runs, that was awe-inspiring.
But I wonder if pitchers would get off on the idea. Let's say there are 13 pitchers that are eligible and healthy to pitch for the American League tonight. Steve Delabar and Brett Cecil being two. Games on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, beginning at 7:30. I wonder if they could split it up and say, you know what, we're going to use 9 pitchers for the game. You shouldn't need any more than that. And we're going to use 4 for the home run derby. And your goal actually is to get the batter out. Your goal is not to give up a home run. Talk about compelling. Because then you're just not getting lobs, you know, lob balls in there from your daddy. You know what I mean? Which Cano and Harper did last night.
Imagine getting Mariano Rivera throwing that famous cut fastball. There may be none. Maybe one home run wins it.
Again, I'm trying to make something that I find kind of boring into something somehow less boring, and maybe I should just leave it alone. If people like it, they like it. If they watch, they watch. I don't have to watch, so why am I complaining about it?
The stands were filled. The fans seemed to love it. The ratings will probably be pretty decent in America for the Home Run Derby.
People realized they had paid $250 to watch batting practice about halfway through, and
I gotta say,
shaking their heads.
One of my
agony.
Two takeaways from last night, I could not agree more, Greg, with the I'm fascinated by how quickly they can register that number to tell you how far the home run went. Yeah, the place was packed last night, Jim, but when you looked at some of the shots, there was a lot of liquid encouragement out there. Well, that's what people...
It looks like more a party than anything,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, and that's
sort
fine.
Of more meant to be.
100%. If you want to have a party at Citi Field,
I mean,
great.
People go to political conventions, and they sit up in the upper regions, and they drink and watch people waving signs and giving speeches. So there's something for everybody in life, you know?
But do they fight during that? Because at one time, they cut to Mike Piazza, who was on the panel, and there was a bit of a fist fight in the lower deck of the stands at Citi Field.
In New York, with booze.
Guys in headlock and throwing haymakers in behind Piazza.
Well,
there was
atmosphere, at least, because even last year, we saw this in Kansas City, where, there hasn't been great atmosphere in a Royals game in a long, long time. We're waiting for it here. They're waiting for it there. Meaningful baseball games late in the season. But, you know, it was fun last year. They booed Robinson Cano like crazy because Billy Butler had been, you know, excluded from the home run derby, apparently. And they really wanted to see the hometown guy, which the Mets got to see last night in David Wright. So last night, I went to a Mets game last year where R.A. Dickey started in April. against the Miami Marlins and Jose Reyes. Funny how things have changed since then. And there might have been 18,000 people there. And there was no atmosphere, nothing, zero. And you think, these are the Mets. And 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the Mets were the marquee. Imagine the Mets had played Interleague then and come to Sky Dome in 19 or come to the Exhibition Stadium in 1986. Rock stars, Carter, Hernandez, Gooden, Strawberry. It's unbelievable.
Well, and Dykstra and on it goes. And that was the big line in Saturday Night Live in the 80s, Mets tickets. I mean, that was the big thing. Get me some Mets tickets, the billable message man, because you wouldn't want Yankees tickets, but you wanted to see the Mets play. And maybe
that was all subliminal message guy Kevin Nealon could get. Maybe
that is all they could get.
But you're right. They were a hotter ticket than the Yankees. And I'll tell you what, they may be again in 5 years. If their starters are, Wheeler, Harvey, and Syndergaard going into the future, what are you cringing at?
Well, I'm cringing because
Syndergaard is English for Tuukka Rask. I want you to know that right
Stop
now.
Stop it.
I want you to realize
Very
that.
Very nice. Yeah. I just think it's going to be extremely hard to unseat the Yankees from that perch. Because you're not wrong, obviously, with what was going on in the 80s and the Mets and the dominance, but the Yankees have built that empire, evil
know,
as it
though,
may be.
But Rivera can't pitch forever.
No, that's fine.
A-Rod's eventually going to have to leave.
But are you gonna have 30 years of greatness from the New York Mets, starting with this little track? I just don't see it happening.
They had a decade of it. They were a bad team throughout all the – after the amazing Mets in 69, they were bad for almost all the 70s. They got good around 83 or 84 with Gooden and Strawberry rising up, and it only lasted about 5 or 6 years, okay? And then even when they made it back to the World Series in 2000, I remember this distinctly. Everyone's like, wow, Subway Series, huge, ratings will be through the roof. And nobody even cared about the Mets. You wanted somebody, you wanted the Giants and Bonds, or you wanted Philadelphia. You wanted some other team there, anybody but the Mets. And the only thing people remember from that is Clemens and Piazza, with Clemens throwing the shard of the bat at Piazza.
That is the only highlight for the Mets in that World Series, unfortunately, if you're a Mets fan. That is it. But the law of cycles say eventually, in the next few years, the Mets will be up.
Oh,
at the same time, the Yankees
are down.
They'll
be a better team, but you're not going to supplant Yankees.
I think you can.
So when we get the second NHL team in the GTA, which we will someday, they're actually going to supplant the Toronto Maple Leafs and popular.
You're talking a team from foundation up as opposed to a team that does have heritage. There are hardcore Mets. Jerry Seinfeld's a Mets fan. There are celebrities. We're not talking Clippers versus Lakers, even though I would tell you that I think the Clippers will become the better team. But you're asking yourself, you're trying to supplant 40 years of Laker winning. That's not, I think the Yankees are easier supplanted as New York's team than the Lakers in LA for basketball.
And my brother-in-law who lives in New Jersey, that's very distinctive for the people he works with in the tri-state area.
Yeah, he would know. And Giants, Jets, it's the same thing.
He is a Giants fan and he's a Mets fan. And they view the Jets and the Yankees fan as the enemy.
Those are the city teams are the Jets and the Yankees.
Yes.
And the suburban teams are the Giants and the Mets to some extent. The Mets are out a little bit further, but yeah.
But yeah, a Mets fan hates Yankees fans and vice versa. That's very divisive, I think, in New York. And you're not, I don't know any New Yorkers a fan of both.
No, you can't be. You absolutely can't.
That'd be great if that happened in the NHL here, though. Who are your two favorite teams, Kit? Toronto and Markham? Really? What's wrong with you?
But that could
have parents.
That could happen here with a team in Markham in the NHL. You would have people that would gravitate to the team, and maybe just maybe that they have.
I don't know. It'll be the most fascinating. One of the most. I don't want to use hyperbole here when I don't have to. It'll be one of the most fascinating sports occurrences of our lifetime to see if people turn on the Leafs. Like I mean, turn against them, leave them basically for the new hot kid in town, the new kid in town, if you will.
They
right?
won't be able to because Tim Leiwicki has already said now in the next 5 to 10 years, they're going to win a Stanley Cup. And then so they'll win the Stanley Cup before Markham gets its team.
And double the value of
MLS. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's great.
But I've always said, aren't you still of the mind that once Leaf fans win the Stanley Cup, their passion will be a little bit bridled, more as opposed to unbridled? Like, it's like, I really believe that's the case with Boston Red Sox fans. They've seen it. It happened. It even happened again. And now they can die in peace. That's basically the line, isn't it?
I'm convinced there are people who have season tickets to the Leafs who will not give it up until they win a Stanley Cup.
Absolutely.
And then once they win the Stanley Cup, they can say, I can sell it now.
So this game counts for home field, American League, National League tonight. Do we care about the result as much as we used to? I can never tell if it's just that I'm older than I was when I was 10 or 11 and the All-Star game meant everything to me in the middle of the summer. Baseball was my favorite sport growing up. I should get that out on the table. So the All-Star game being the most meaningful All-Star game meant a ton. I'd keep score during the game. I'd put it in an actual scorebook. I'd, you know, fiddle around something else with the lineups. And I don't know if 10, 11-year-olds do that now. I feel like it's a sport where younger people don't have as much time for it. I know there are young fans and they go to games, but I don't think they have the passion that we had for the sport.
No, and if the Blue Jays were 10 games over 500 at the break, there'd be a lot of interest in the game tonight for the American League. The thought that the Blue Jays would be a playoff team, they need to win this in case they're looking for home field advantage. That's a big part of it. In your city, if you have a team that's really good and is on the verge of the playoffs and has a chance to go deep, then you really care about the result.
Think about if you're a Paul Beeston or if you're a, you know, executive in another team, you're adding, you know, you got 45,000 more seats at a couple hundred bucks pop.
Concessions and on
for getting
and on.
The game. Yeah, no matter what.
That's right? A lot of money.
Even though last year was a sweep, you think about that. You know, if you're going 6-7 games and most of the time the World Series does, it's a huge, huge added revenue.
Oh, I mean, you think about it. Everything is jacked up in price, parking and all of that. It's a cash cow.
Now, Bud Selig was on Letterman last night. Let's do this really quickly and was asked about the pending suspensions. If you think there's no news now, give it a couple days. Bud Selig was asked by David Letterman on The Late Show about A-Rod specifically.
What's going to happen to Alex Rodriguez? What is he ever going to play for the Yankees?
Well, only time will tell. We're in the midst of a very thorough and tough investigation on all of this because I really believe that it's not only the right thing to do, but we're going to do it, and that's all I can tell you.
Now, let me ask you this. On his side of things, isn't there a sum of money that's at stake here if he doesn't play again this season?
It's going to be between him and the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. There is, yes.
And that sum of money is incalculable? Is it 100?
No, it's not incalculable.
It's 100 million.
It's over 100 million, and it's been calculated by everybody, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how this works. The Yankees will figure out something. And is he one that might be suspended?
I'd rather not say who will not be suspended.
You know, don't you? I can tell you.
I do. The answer is I do.
And how many players will be affected by the upcoming suspensions? We believe that after the All-Star game, there will be a reckoning. Am I right about that?
At some point in the future.
Yeah. And how many are we talking about?
We don't know yet. We don't know yet.
More than a dozen? Less than a dozen?
We don't know.
So there you go. Hey, you got some answers there.
But it certainly doesn't look good for Mr. Rodriguez. Something's going to happen. Whether he comps a plea with MLB to cut it down to the reported 150 games, he's facing something.
I go on the run. I just start driving. I just
like
get
D.B.
in the car.
Cooper?
Yeah, yeah. I would get
change
away.
Change your identity.
Yeah, midnight run with De Niro and Charles Grodin. That's what I would do. All right, Blue Jays tickets are for Monday night. Again, luminaries like Mike Farwell and Frank Radio will be there at the game. Find us. We should have a contest, Farwell. See if people can find us.
That'd be great.
Everybody knows you, though. I never step out of my own backyard, really, in the Durham region. Which former Blue Jay, for tickets to go to the game Monday night, which former Blue Jay has made the most All-Star game appearances in team history? 416-870-0590 or *590. Dispelling count? There's only three L's in Lily. Ted Lilly? No? Hillenbrand. How many L's in Hillenbrand? 416-870-0590. Come on, don't laugh. Both were All-Stars. Crazy. And that's what 19 years out of the playoffs will do to you. Ted Lilly and Shea Hillenbrand will be your All-Stars. Better times are ahead. They're already here. Stop it. 416-870-0590. 716 coming up. Noel Prefontaine will join us. Josh Bailey, a new five-year deal with the New York Islanders.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. I caught you smiling.
I know I see you here. Herbert in Richmond Hill. He adds the ERT at the end. All right. Is our winner of Blue Jays Dodgers tickets for Monday at the Rogers Center. New Dave Steve participated in 7 All-Star games between 1980 and 1990. That was the one sure thing. They had so many All-Stars. I think in 86, they had 6 players go.
And then the early 90s, during their heyday World Series, when they had Molitor and all those guys, they had a big contingent with Olerud and Alomar. Was there not four guys from the hitting lineup? At least 3 made the All-Star game that one year.
Probably. But the mid-80s were all homegrown guys. It was sort of like the first several years of the franchise, it was like, we have to take somebody. And then it became guys were earning it. Guys were getting voted in as well, which was a tough thing to do for a Canadian team at the time. Before the internet as well. That's a big factor. The Toronto Argonauts on the road Friday night. They'll play Winnipeg. It's as tight as it can get and inconsistent, actually, as it can get in the East. All four teams, 1-2. They're back home. It's a quick turnaround. Next Tuesday, the British Columbia Lions will be in on Tuesday night at the Rogers Centre at 7:30. We're very happy to welcome in the kicker-punter for the Toronto Argonauts. You know him very well, one of the best kickers and punters in CFL history. Noel Prefontaine joins us on Brady and Lang. Thanks for doing this, Noel. We appreciate it.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're also, of course, a former member. Jim said we got to ask him, because we never have. I think we've had you on a couple times, and we've never asked you about your XFL season. You're also the winning kicker in the $1 million game. I look back now, and it seems like they undervalue the price tag of that particular. Now it'd be worth a lot more than $1 million, wouldn't it?
I would hope so. You know, the funny thing about that is actually when I when I was signed with the LA Extreme, they signed me as a third-string quarterback. I actually took the last snap in the league.
Oh, did you? You took a knee?
I took a knee in the championship game, yeah.
Because I wonder, because Scott Milanovich, your current head coach, backed up Tommy Maddox, who people remember well from UCLA, played a little bit with the Steelers as well, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they leapfrogged Scotty there and let me go do it. And it wasn't that exciting, but knowing that it was, you know, maybe the last play ever in the league, it was pretty neat.
Did you think it was when did you start to think this was a 1 year proposition and you'd be headed back to the CFL the next year?
I would say, you know, we opened up at the Coliseum there. I think we had about 40,000 fans, and then the following two games, I think we were averaging about 5.
Oh,
so
God.
I think I knew pretty early.
Jeepers.
Did you know at the time when we were playing with Scott Milanovich that he'd be a future head coach in the CFL?
Absolutely. Well, not in the CFL. I knew he would be a future head coach somewhere. I think, you know, Scott was one of the guys that, you know, he ran our meeting. You know, he ran our offensive meeting. He was very influential in the game planning. He was good friends with Tommy. I just remember, watching him and Barker sort of, you know, work together in terms of creating a good game plan for Tommy and obviously winning a championship, as they both knew what they were doing.
You've been a big part of this league for close to two decades now. What makes Milanovich the perfect fit for the head coach for this Argos team?
I think it's a combination of being a young guy, having some high-level playing experience, and separating himself when he became a coach. I think you see a lot of young coaches when they get into the game and they start coaching, they can't let go of that player mentality. They want to be a player still. They want to, you know, that kind of thing. They want to, you know, sort of communicate with players as a player. Because it's very different as a coach, right? You have to set yourself away from them, and I think Scott does a great job at that.
Noel Prefontaine joining us. Argos at Winnipeg this Friday, and, of course, back home against BC at Rogers Center on Tuesday night. Let me ask you about where you're at with training. You know, it's incredible. You've kept up your fitness. You're probably not doing all the same things or eating all the same things you were 10 years ago, but you're a testament that you can play a long time in this league.
You know, it's nice to be back, and it's nice to know that I got off the couch and went to BC and played halfway decent. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been doing some stuff, but not going through a camp, not going through sort of the physical vigors that come with, you know, with camp. I'm a little behind the eight ball. I didn't expect, you know, this to happen so quickly. I wanted to just sign the practice roster and kind of gradually get back into it. But unfortunately, with the injury to Swayze, I've been thrusted back into the situation. But at the same time, I'm enjoying it, but I know my body's not there yet, and I'm thinking maybe a couple weeks I'll start feeling, you know, in game shape.
But is your heart and all telling you that, geez, I think I can still play a couple more years in this league?
Well, I felt that, you know, during the offseason, you know, when I went out after the hip surgery last year. I think a lot of teams, and including myself, felt, you know, possibly that, you know, maybe it was it for me. Maybe it was going to recover, you know, the way I wanted it to. I was able to come in at the end of last year and not kick without pain, but, you know, I mean, I felt like I could do a little bit, but to let it rest for the time that it needed and to start kicking in this off season and to sort of feel what it was doing. I knew I could play. I knew I could play somewhere. You know, I think for me, my situation is a lot different, right? I've accomplished a lot in this game and I've played a lot of years and I have a young family here and you know, which we just added to. I had a baby girl, you know, a few days ago, it's not conducive for me to really pick up and go and play in another city and do those types of things. You know, I mean, playing here and staying in Toronto is the best fit for me.
Noel Prefontaine joining us on Brady and Lang. Game is Friday night in Winnipeg, and then a week from Tuesday. They don't play next week, but a week from Tuesday against BC on the 30th. How much more stable before you go does this franchise feel than around that era of 07, 08? You were traded to Edmonton. There was a lot of, you know, it never felt quite right to fans. It probably didn't feel right to a lot of players that just they could not pick a direction and stick with it.
Well, I mean, you talk about the 07, 08 when we were running through those issues. I mean, I remember back when Sherwood Schwartz on the team, and you know, at one point him bolting in the team and the league owning us, right?
So yeah.
I've seen worse, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, it's sad to be a part of this organization for as long as I've been a part of it, to see the issues that it has being such a great city in this country. But it's a little bothersome. You know, I've been associated with this team. I've seen sort of the lack of support, or I should say more of, you know, in terms of ownership and things like that. It's just, football is a very difficult sell in Toronto. It just is, right? There's so many other things going on. Everybody knows that, but the Argos are a very good product. It is football. You know, it's a shame that it hasn't received as much notoriety as some of the other teams do in some of the other provinces, right? But at the same time, you know, our loyal fans have always been there. You know, they still come and support us. We appreciate them so much. And, you know, it's one of those things that this is the CFL. You're going to have these sort of issues, at least through my experience with it. And you kind of block that stuff out, right? I mean, for us as players, we're making a living. We're providing for our families. We're playing a game that we love, and we just take it from there.
Thanks for doing this, Noel. Obviously, congratulations on the best wishes and a busy household. So we appreciate you taking some time this morning. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, boys. Take care.
Noel Prefontaine, Argos, and in Winnipeg this week, and then they have four of their next five games at home. So it's busy all through August. Obviously, the Labor Day game at home this year, and they'll play BC on the 30th.
Doing the math in my head, I believed he has been part of four ownerships.
You did a pen. I saw you use a pen, so let's not try and brag.
For the Argos in his time.
Oh, sure, easily, yeah.
And that's, he mentioned Sherwood Schwartz at the time. We thought he had good intentions, and on it goes. And hopefully into the current incarnation that this is the stability the Argos need with the coaching staff and
but
the
management. But there was damage done. We just I don't think we know how much.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about a Grey Cup winner, and I would liken it to so many other things, given that I watched so many CFL games, knew all the players growing up. And like we're saying, even about the All-Star game, I can't get in the head of, you know, a 14-year-old boy knowing what he likes sports-wise. How much of it is he watching? How much of it does he even watch live? How much of it is he PVRing? And sports is hard to do with it, but flipping through the commercials. How much of it is he watching online? That's all these things are things we're thinking about.
That's the challenge, I think, for not just fans or consumers or sports but network broadcasters. Is the 14-year-old boy out there who's a sports fanatic, are they getting all their information off their smartphone and tablet? Do they even go to the TV to find out what's going on? Yeah. Is it everything done online?
And when can he buy a new car? For advertisers, get him, you know, get that Sweet 16, get him one for his birthday. He deserves it. He really does. So Alex Rodriguez hit a home run last night. So far removed from the All-Star festivities. 14 times this guy's been in the All-Star game. And let's face it, voted in most of those 14 times. So we can't play the, hey, everyone hates him card. If you get voted into All-Star game after All-Star game, you are not a unpopular player. He had a home run last night, went 2-for-4 in a rehab game with AA Trenton. And Friday, though, he met with investigators from MLB, talked to him about the Biogenesis case, and then actually apparently was so depressed, New York Daily News noting this morning, that he it looked like the game was going to be rained out, so A-Rod didn't even show up. Now, I'm not going to hammer him for that, but nonetheless, he is... He's in a bad state right now. I wonder if it can turn to where we think, why is he the poster boy for this? When we're just going to go, hey, all Ryan Braun was trying to do was get ahead. Hey, all Nelson Cruz and Johnny Peralta and all these other players were trying to get ahead. I don't know that we're ever going to, we seem to be vilifying him more than we ever did. Clemens, Bonds, McGuire, Sosa,
I'm not an A-Rod fan, but you are correct, and he is taking the brunt of this. And Ryan Braun is skating in a large part on what's going on.
Pettit, right, comes out. We don't even give Andy Pettit a second thought. Used PED, said, I needed to rehab from an injury. So did most of these guys.
And now we look at Andy Pettit as this great veteran. Look at
tells the truth, admits his mistakes.
What a leader. But the Ryan Braun thing, when the truth comes out, I hope people go at him as hard as they did A-Rod.
Coming up, Josh Bailey from the New York Islanders. A fat five-year deal for him to finish what a lot of these young Isles have started. That's the concept as they move to Brooklyn in the next couple of years. And machines or free weights. We'll put Farwell to the test next.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Langenbrenner gives it away, and Bailey scores! Josh Bailey with his first goal since coming back off a giveaway gift wrap. Como back to the line for McDonald. It's tipped. They score! Bailey down on a knee. Brodeur made the first save. Islanders lead it 2-0.
You hear Jamie Langenberg in a clip, you think, what year is this?
No kidding.
He's only 38 years old. He's 36. He just turned 38. It feels like he should be like 43. He's played so many games, so deep in the playoffs so many times.
Was he 18 or 19 when he broke in the league, though? Is that part of it, that he was a teenager when he broke in?
No, he's 20. First year with Dallas, he was 21
years
old.
Seems like he's been playing forever.
Yeah, lots of winning. Dallas, New Jersey. They're hoping to do lots of winning on the Islanders side of things. We'll get to Josh Bailey in just a sec. Reminder, Major League Baseball All-Star Game tonight on Sportsnet. And, of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Coverage begins at 7:30. Mike Trout, Robinson Cano, Miguel Cabrera, Chris Davis, Jose Bautista will be the first five hitters, potentially against New York Mets pitcher Matt Harvey. They did a great thing on the street in New York. To see it with Jimmy Fallon.
I heard about it. He's walking around.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon's show had Matt Harvey walking around asking people who their favorite Met was. And then if they didn't say his name, what they thought of Matt Harvey. And the one kid was great. He's like, yeah, Harvey's okay. He just hasn't proven very much so far. And he's like, I haven't? And the kid's like, oh. They should do it really with a 300-pound offensive lineman. Because Harvey's a big guy. He's not exactly physically intimidating. You know, they should do it, Farwell,
get David
Clarkson to do this in the streets of Toronto.
You always got to invoke that name, don't you?
Do you think David Clarkson is like a new Wendell Clark? That's kind of the question. That's kind of the motif you want to get going.
Absolutely.
In the city.
I will do it.
Yeah.
David's a friend of the morning show.
So he is. Nice. There's no question. I hope it goes great for him here. Right.
They're going to love him, Bryce. They're going to love him. You're going to love him.
Wait till he's 37. They're going to love him. I mean, after 7 years.
Wait till you're 37.
Cups,
oh, wait a minute. Yeah.
All right. So, now I would argue all of society, except maybe several thousand people, were rooting for the Islanders against the Penguins in the first round. It's sort of, to me, it was good versus evil. I don't know how it was in your household.
It was very much evil for the Islanders because of my Penguins household. But when they won the second game to make it 2-2 in that series, I think a lot of people are thinking, wouldn't it be great if they pulled off the upset?
Incredibly entertaining. It was great to have them back in the playoffs. And, a lot of incredibly incredibly skilled, incredibly likable players from this team. And a lot from Ontario, too. So there's a lot of local interest in how the Islanders do. Joining us on the line is Josh Bailey, who did sign a new five-year deal with the Islanders to play deep into his career with John Tavares, Michael Grabner, Kyle Pozo, hopefully Matt Molson, a few other guys. Josh, thanks a lot for doing this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Nice to get the financial obligation out of the way. And you mentioned it, finish what we started. And you feel like a lot of these guys do here in that this really built, and you took a huge step last year. And like I said, really matched the Penguins shift for shift for an awful lot of that series. And some championship experience may have just won out in the end. But you guys probably proved you can play with anybody in a playoff round.
Yeah, I mean, I think we certainly took some steps in the right direction. I think, looking back, I thought we played some good hockey in the playoffs, and I think we handed them two games. We had two pretty tough outings, and I think anytime you do that in a series, you're not really helping your cause. But I think two overtime losses, they can go either way. And I thought the series really could have went either way. Obviously, they're an incredible team over there and have a lot of great players, but I think it was a good stepping stone for us, and hopefully next year we can get back in a situation in the playoffs and use that experience to help us out.
When you were shaking hands with the Penguins after the series was over, Josh, did you get a sense of the fact you earned some respect from Pittsburgh about what you guys did in that series?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a couple guys on their team that kind of stepped up and said that, and It was nice to hear, but I think at that point you're not really, enjoying. It's always easy to be the good guy in the handshake after you win. So I think we'd like to be on the other side of things after that next year.
Josh Bailey, a New York Islander forward, joining us. And there was so much optimism as well about the stability of the franchise. And I know there'll still be some discomfort in moving to Brooklyn in a couple of years. You guys are going to play a preseason game at that great new arena at Barclays Center. But even just getting that out of the way may have helped you guys as players. It may have helped your coaching staff. And it helps the fans at least know what's up, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think as far as the move to Brooklyn goes, obviously it's nice to be able to stay close to home on the island. And I think, like you said, for our fans, it gives that stability. And I think for the players, it gives that stability as well. And ultimately for the organization, so I think it was certainly a good thing. And it's nice to know that we're going to be staying in New York.
How does the addition of Cal Clutterbuck in the offseason, Josh, help your team going forward?
Oh, I think it's big for us. I think he's the type of guy. I mean, I haven't played against him a whole lot since turning pro, but obviously played against him a decent amount in junior when he played with the Generals, and he's a tough guy to play against. I think I was actually having this conversation yesterday, and I think when someone asked me about it, I was like, well, the way I think of it is if the Rangers had signed him, I'd have been like, oh, damn it, I got to play against this guy this many times this year. So I think that sums it up pretty good. He's the type of guy you want on your team and that other guys don't want to play against.
Well, I mean, you're a number one center in the OHL. So is John Tavares. Guys like you and Tavares must be like, we had to have our head on a swivel playing guys like Matt Martin and Clutterbuck, and now they're on our team. So we don't have to, we don't have to look for them looking for us, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think we'll be, when you add any, even just one guy like them on your team, let alone two, it makes your team a lot tougher to play against. And certainly both, we're lucky at both of them.
Josh Bailey, New York Islanders forward, joining us. You get Evgeny Nabokov back. That's big as well. He may only have a few years left, but he was very good for you guys last year. And that's the big thing, hasn't it been? It's not even just been injuries, and I know you had Mark Streit injured that one whole year, and you guys will have to go forward without him next year. But, God, Nabokov just gave you what you just couldn't get in terms of a consistent, healthy goalie for so many of those years when you might have been good enough, but you just couldn't get the goaltending because guys couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough good things about Nabby. I think he's just a rock back there for us. I think his leadership and the calming presence that he brings to the team, I think anytime he's back between the pipes, it's certainly something that, is welcomed in our lineup, and we're all pretty excited to see that happen.
Josh, many people around the NHL are looking at your team, the Islanders, as the potential to be something to do, something special around the league because of the young talent. What do you guys have to do collectively next year to take that next step?
I don't know if it's one particular thing. I think obviously it was good to take the step this year, but I think going forward, it's certainly not going to be easy. I think you learn how tough it really is when you make the playoffs and how much tougher it gets going forward. And I think there's a lot of good teams that didn't make the playoffs, and then there's going to be a lot of good teams that don't make it again this year, and we got to make sure we're not one of them. And I think we want to come out of the gate a little quicker. I think we've had a few slower starts over the past few seasons, and as well as even last year, there was a time where we weren't looking too good, and then we end up turning it on late and found a way into the playoffs. And it'd be nice to make it a little easier on ourselves. Not that it's going to be easy at all, but at least come out and have a good start and get off on the right track.
Before you go, not that he wasn't a great player beforehand, but again, a guy you played against in junior when you were with Owen Sound or Windsor in Oshawa and Tavares, and there must have been nights when you knew the MVP talk and the Hart Trophy talk was there, and you must have thought at times, yeah, I may be playing with the best player in the league at this particular point the way he was going.
No, absolutely. I think can't say enough good things about Johnny. I think the way his play has been and being able to see where, like all the guys on the team, where we've come from a few years ago, and especially him and his talent, his work ethic. I think he's a great leader for our team, and I think seeing him day in, day out in practice and then in the games and just how bad he really wants it, and he's like a bull out there on the ice when he gets the puck. He's so determined, and he makes everyone around him better and our team a lot better. So I think certainly can't say enough good things about him, and we're obviously incredibly lucky to have him.
Josh Bailey, New York Islanders forward. Congratulations on the deal, the stability, and obviously you guys moving forward. You're going to be awfully fun to watch over the next couple of years, and you sure were last season. Thanks for this morning, Josh.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
There's Josh Bailey, New York Islanders forward. And it's funny, you know, Islanders have been a punching bag. They've been the butt of an awful lot of jokes. And we've talked about this for a couple of years. Young players are staying. And you know, say what you will about it, but all these guys have made an all-in commitment. And
Hamonic just locked up long-term as well.
Yeah, that's big. Thomas Hickey's kind of resurrected his career. I was really impressed by him playing at the ACC last year in a top-four situation. They got him enough money for Matt Molson, who they'll have under contract next year, but then he's a pending UFA. And you know, like Kessel, like Phaneuf, they're probably working on that, you know, as we speak.
But the irritation factor playing the Islanders now with Matt Martin and Clutterbuck, it's high. It's not going to be an easy game going against the Islanders.
And Kazikas
as well. Yeah, exactly.
It's funny, Brad Boyce, who we've talked to a couple times, no, not signed yet. Don't think he's coming back on the Islanders, but when we talked to him earlier in the year, it was such a good fit for him to play on that. He was playing top-line minutes with Tavares and Molson a fair bit, and he had a great second unit out there with Bailey and Oposo and Grabner.
So. Well, in a lot of ways, I think he revived his career. With 35 points in a shortened season, I think that's should be worthy enough of getting a deal somewhere.
Yeah. Now we talk about this a lot, and we talk about fitness and going to the gym and whatnot. And we found this really intriguing. Do we have music for this? Amazingly enough. Now this just makes me write. Are we violating any copyright laws at
yes.
all? I hope so. And this is a constant debate, isn't it? Although cardio against lifting is often a like if you've got 20 minutes, what are you more inclined to do? Go to some lifting.
Well, I do a thing called CrossFit, where it's high-intensity lifting without any breaks.
I just wanted a one-word answer. So
but that's the thing. That's not that easy. So you get your heart rate up, so you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and especially after putting that muffin back or whatever you just did. What did you do
there?
It
was Nico's mom's banana bread.
Oh, my heavens. Yeah, that's great. That's not rich in calories, Nico. Great.
That stuff's a gift from the heavens.
Oh.
But a new question, free weights or exercise machines. We're going to destroy. This is Mythbusters right here. Many people have thought for years you're more likely to get injured with free weights. You'll drop them, you'll start to bench too much, you pull your shoulder the wrong way. And a new stat put together by the fine folks at the Washington Fitness Institute, WFI as I like to call them, notes that safety injuries far more common with machines than free weights, as a matter of fact.
They don't know how to use the machines properly.
Will you show them from now on?
If the people ask, yes.
If I come to the gym later, can you give me a tutorial?
Sure.
Okay.
Users can get pinned and trapped. One's bad. Getting both pinned and trapped is worse. And can injure or lose digits by getting caught in the workings of machines. This could be really graphic injuries if your thumb or a fragment of your skin on your finger gets caught in between one of the racks.
There's only one free weight exercise that you have the potential for something happening as a guy. A friend of mine was in a gym and a guy was doing the lateral raises for the shoulders and came down a little too close to his privates and pinned
himself. I've never seen anything that scary in the gym. Really?
He said you never heard
it. So did he scream?
Oh, God, yeah.
Sometimes you got to just grit and bear it.
No, he screamed.
The only time I screamed at the gym was when some guy shaved his mustache off and left all of it in the sink.
The sink has not enough water pressure.
That doesn't mean you'll walk out of the room.
I don't have all day. I got stuff to do.
Really? You got that All-Star Home Run Derby PVR'd. You got to see the rest of that tonight.